Welcome to Your Turn, Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us today. We're going to follow the money as per usual and start off talking with Federal Timesman Steve Watkins and Sean Riley. And then at the half hour, we're going to be visiting with Julie Tagan. She is Legislative Director for the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association. So, Steve and Sean, are you there? Hey,
good morning.
Good deal. Okay, two for one. Bless your hearts. Hey, listen, so much to talk about. I think I could leave the room and let you guys go at it. But we've got the budget coming out. We've got the president endorsing the idea of eliminating Saturday mail delivery. We've got all of these real and possible threats to the federal retirement system and pay changes. What are you looking at?
You ticked off most of the big ones. The federal budget obviously is a big one, and of course a lot of feds have their eye on what's being called the SAFE Act. That's the bill by Congressman Ross that would reform the federal pension program. That's going to get some action this week, so we could certainly talk about that. And as you mentioned, the Postal Service released its first quarter results last week, and we've seen in the budget that the administration is on board for cutting Saturday delivery.
Well, how about that SAFE Act then? Let's go with that first.
Obviously, this has got a lot of people's attention, and the unions are in an uproar and really hitting Capitol Hill pretty hard on this. Basically, this is a bill that was introduced in late January by Congressman Ross, who oversees the House Workforce Subcommittee. It would do a number of things. It would basically increase the amount of contributions that current feds have to pay into their pensions by basically 1.5%. FERS employees would see their contribution increase from 0.8% up to 2.3%. CSRS folks would see their contribution increase from 7% up to 8.5%. So they'd certainly feel it right away in the pocketbook. But then the real big hit is on new federal employees hired on 2013. Who have less than 5 years of prior federal service, they would see a fairly dramatic reduction in the pension payments that they would get once they retire. That's because the factor that would calculate their pension would essentially take their pension down to 40%. So that's basically a pretty big hit for them. One of the things that actually, we just noticed about the bill recently, and we didn't catch this right away, is it also would allow current feds to put unused leave towards their TSP. So that's a new little wrinkle that I think listeners will be interested.
That's the one carrot in the deal, I guess, huh? Well, this is interesting because there seems to be so many proposals out there that it's very easy to confuse them. Now, this Ross one seems to be the most drastic, but President Obama proposed that feds pay more for their annuities as well, didn't he?
Correct, yeah. In the budget that just came out for 2013, he is proposing that the contribution go up three successive years by 0.4% per year, so that at the end of the day, after 3 years, feds will be paying 1.2% more of their paycheck into the pension fund. So they would certainly feel that right away.
Okay, so that's a little less painful than the Ross proposal.
Yeah, and that basically mirrors the same thing he proposed to the super committee late last year. So it's not a new proposal. I think it probably caught feds off guard nonetheless. You know, they were many were quite piqued to see that the pay raise was quite slight that was being proposed for feds. That is 0.5%, as you mentioned in the outset. So the increased contribution to the pension would basically wipe that away. So essentially a lot of feds are correctly viewing that proposal as a essentially a third year of a federal pay freeze.
Yeah. Well, Sean, were you surprised that the president in his budget addressed the issue of eliminating Saturday delivery?
Not particularly, because, again, as Steve just noted, I mean, this was something that that I believe they had endorsed last year in the super committee recommendations. And, in fact, a lot of what they proposed, a number of things affecting the Postal Service in the budget request that were basically a rerun of what they had put forth to the super committee back last September, and which is, you know, went nowhere when the committee couldn't agree on a final package that would cut $1.2 trillion from the deficit over the next 10 years. It does show, but it is, you know, this is something that, as you know, is very strongly opposed by the letter carriers unions, who are natural allies of the president and Democrats generally. So it is significant, but it's also worth remembering that he proposes some very significant benefits for the Postal Service. I mean, he would cut the bill that they what they'd have to pay from fiscal 2011 to 2013 for retiree health care, you know, for cover the cost of taking care of future retirees from about $16.7 billion down to about $1.6 billion. I mean, basically give them a $15 billion break, and then would also hand them about the Postal Service about $11 billion in surplus contributions to the federal employees' retirement system. And one idea for that that's been percolating in the Senate is to use that to fund a huge series of employee buyouts and early retirements, essentially to really reduce the payroll quickly without resorting to involuntary job cuts. So I don't think it was a total surprise. I mean, you know, this now goes into a mix of proposals that are floating around Congress. There's a there's a House bill, a Senate bill that are very different. You've got the administration's proposals. Still to be seen, though, is how strongly the administration is going to get behind this. I mean, there's I think most people who follow this issue closely think that there's any kind of comprehensive fix, assuming one is possible for the Postal Service's many problems, is not going to happen unless the White House gets behind it very strongly.
Well, you mentioned a couple of things that made me think. Well, one, you're talking about the unions, the letter carriers union. All of the federal unions, as far as I know, either the unions or their leadership endorsed President Obama when he was a candidate and were delighted when he was elected and helped work for him. And so now they're irritated with the small pay raise. They're irritated with the higher employee contributions. But do the unions have anywhere to go?
No, I don't think so. I mean, and I was just you should mention this. I was just talking to someone before we came on the show who was saying that probably, federal agencies have a huge stake, perhaps more than anyone in the private sector in the presidential election, because the one thing that's clear that whoever the Republican nominee is going to want to cut government more significantly than anything the Obama administration is proposing.
Well, I was going to ask you, too, and maybe we both comment on this. We hear a lot about election year budgets, and any budget, whatever it's an election year or the middle of the administration, every budget, it's a shopping list, it's a wish list. Nobody expects all of it or even most of it to be approved, but it's something out there. In an election year, the president's typically, and I think it's being couched this way this time, it's an election year budget, and they put in a lot of things to satisfy a constituency, knowing they're not going to happen, knowing it won't take place, it's dead on arrival. But I would think, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the federal employee changes that the president has proposed, and that is the pay raise, the small pay raise, and the increase in the retirement contributions, those are very likely to happen. They're more than election year politics, right?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And we're going to... Clearly, the Republicans are itching to dial back on federal pay and benefits, and as we were talking earlier about the SAFE Act, we can expect a House approval vote on that. I suspect it'll be approved in the House by the end of the week. So clearly, there's a lot of interest from the Republicans on this. We'll see what happens. I don't expect the Senate to do the same. But as you mentioned, there is a lot of interest in finding more cuts and avoiding a sequester as well, and that's looming over all of this.
Well, you know, the talk and the obviousness about the Republicans, if they take over, cutting government. I had a counter proposal to that, but we need to take a break here. I'd like to ask you when we come back here on WFED 1500 AM.
Navy Rear Admiral retired Elizabeth A. Height, Vice President, U.S. Public Sector Cybersecurity Practice, HP Enterprise Services, on the Cybersecurity Combating Threats to Our Software Environment panel, sponsored by Hewlett-Packard.
There are some incredibly sophisticated capabilities that can be unleashed in this commons called cyberspace that you will not be able to anticipate and you won't see coming. So part of your plan is to defend, part of your plan is to mitigate, and part of your plan is to recover.
Could your IT security have made you less secure? Traditional IT security defenses, firewalls, encryption, and intrusion detection systems are extremely effective, and that's the problem. They're so good that the bad guys are now training their sights on a new target: exploitable vulnerabilities in software applications. HP can help governments secure mission-critical applications by designing security in from the beginning, finding the vulnerabilities inside existing software, and fixing them quickly and cost-effectively. To learn more, visit federalnewsradio.com/HP.
Meeting mission goals through IT modernization, brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
The Interior Department will take another stab at moving its entire workforce to the cloud. Its last attempt last year got tangled up in a bid protest. A new request for proposals calls for secure cloud-based email, calendaring, instant messaging, video conferencing, and other collaboration tools. And Interior is planning a quick turnaround. The RFP calls for every mailbox in the department to be moved to the new service by December of this year. The department plans to award a contract by April 30th.
General Dynamics IT delivers the full strength of enterprise IT to drive innovation like infrastructure consolidation and modernization, cross-domain information sharing, cloud computing, Web 2.0, and a constant flow of new applications and IT services. General Dynamics IT helps government, military, and commercial organizations achieve new levels of productivity and mission effectiveness. General Dynamics IT brings together the expertise, technology, and best practices to deliver secure enterprise IT solutions. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
Agencies don't seem as gung-ho on telework as the White House or lawmakers would have it. Maryland Congressman John Sarbanes and Virginia Congressman Jerry Connolly sponsored the Telework Enhancement Act of 2010. They recently asked the Congressional Research Service to find out how agencies are applying the law. Turns out the Department of Veterans Affairs allows just 12% of its employees to telework. Elsewhere, many feds keep going to the office even when they have permission to work from home.
Attention new federal employees. WEPA is currently offering up to $100,000 of life insurance on a guaranteed basis to those individuals within 180 days of their original federal hire date. No medical exam or physician's reports required. WEPA, a nonprofit association founded in 1943, provides life insurance at rates significantly less than the federal program. WEPA also offers premium refunds and a college scholarship program. Visit WAEPA.org to learn more. Once again, WAEPA.org.
What is transformational leadership? How have government leaders successfully led transformations and what they considered before undertaking such initiatives? Join host Michael Keegan next week as he explores these questions and much more with Bob Reisner, author of the recent IBM Center report, A Leader's Guide to Transformation, on the Business of Government Hour.
Hey, Cavs fans, going to the game? Then get the app. Download the official Verizon Center mobile app to your Android, iPhone, or BlackBerry to enhance your in-arena experience. You can locate your favorite food and beverage stands, report issues to guest services during the game, find out about future events at the arena, and much more. To download, text ARENA to 43803 or visit WashingtonCaps.com now.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Sean Riley and Steve Watkins from the Federal Times. And before we were so rudely interrupted by a commercial there, I was asking you guys, I call it the Nixon goes to China effect, and that is President Nixon, of all people, opened up relations in China when people thought he was a hardline conservative Republican, and only he could do it. By the same token, when President Reagan was elected, the Washington Post predicted that the Washington area would be decimated, that the 40,000 federal workers would be fired, and that we would become a secondary citizen, a city with federal workers. Of course, that didn't happen. The government, in fact, grew in a different direction. The domestic side went down, but the military side went up. When President Clinton was elected, he came in, and one of his first orders of business was to ordered the elimination of 272,400 federal jobs, and there were that's when the buyouts program started in general. So is it possible that with all this, the dire predictions of the Republicans cutting the government, that in fact once they got in power that they might change their mind?
I wouldn't expect it. I think it's a considered a national issue, and you can see that from the way the Democrats are responding to the attacks on federal pay and benefits. By responding, I mean they're keeping quite quiet. You don't see a full-fledged defense of federal and pay and benefits. I think the recent CBO study, I don't have it with me to go over the details, but as you remember, came out a couple weeks ago, and I think fairly convincingly, you know, swayed the debate on the federal pay gap issue, basically saying what a lot of people were already suspecting, which is that feds do get paid well when they are have lower levels of education, high school or a four-year degree, as compared with the private sector, and that the pay gap is much more pronounced against the feds at the higher educational levels. And so I think studies like that do undermine the cause of the federal workforce. And I think what gets forgotten in a lot of cases is when people, and namely Republicans, complain about government growth, much of that growth has really been in the security arena, intelligence, Defense Department, Homeland Security, Justice Department. That's where the biggest growth has been. So I think the defenders of the federal employees can do a much better job of explaining exactly what federal employees are doing, why their mission is important, and exactly what their mission is. I think that gets lost in the debate. But I think the pay and benefits issue is a tricky one now.
Well, I guess at the end of the day, people believe the statistics they want to believe. You know, 10 of the 15 richest counties in the U.S. are in the Washington area suburbs, and people attribute that to the presence of the government. The Labor Department data by the Federal Salary Council shows that federal workers are underpaid by something like 23.6%. They're very precise in the number. And the Congressional Budget Office says they're overpaid by 16%. So it's very hard to decide which yardstick is being used here. You had an interesting story today in the Federal Times, and it looks like they've brought back this idea of phased retirement.
Yeah, isn't that something? That was, I think, probably a surprise to most folks. But yes, that was in the president's budget. Steve Losey, our pay and benefits reporter, found that in the nitty-gritty of the budget. But this is an idea reprised from a couple years ago. Essentially, what it would do is allow feds to work part-time instead of retiring completely. They could basically receive some partial retirement, partial annuity, while still working part-time, and even during that time still accumulate or earn retirement benefits proportional to their part-time service.
Well, I remember in 2009, which was the great year for federal workers on the Hill, there was some legislation that made this feasible, and I think, and Julie Tagan from NARF is in the studio with me. I'll see if she nods or not. But I believe that it would allow this kind of phased retirement, but it wouldn't hurt your high three or high five if it comes to that. That is, you could work at half salary, and that wouldn't be counted in your high three. Okay, she's nodding. So that would be a major step forward for an awful lot of people.
I think so. I think there would be a huge interest in that. And from the government's perspective, there's a lot of interest. They actually see fairly significant savings out of this, too. They would not have to immediately pay full retirement benefits. They wouldn't have to immediately replace retiring feds who stay on for some time. And it would help a great deal on the whole brain drain issue. Obviously, we are seeing a quite a surge in retirements. Last year, the retirement numbers went up 24% over the previous year. So I think we're in the full swing of a retirement tsunami, as people call it. But, you know, the big issue that agencies are dealing with amidst that is losing a lot of their institutional knowledge. So this would be a good way to try to preserve some of that. And the feds who take advantage of it would be required to mentor younger employees.
Can you see any rationale for people who would argue against this?
I don't. It seems to me a win for everybody. I really don't. There are a number of folks who say, well, we should just basically push the baby boomers out, time for new blood, new energy, and so forth. And I think there's some rationale to that. To seeing an overturn in the workforce to allow agencies to reposition themselves for the future reconsider the types of skills and expertise that they hire on. But obviously, institutional experience is expensive to come by and expensive to lose. So this is a good value, I think, for the government.
It looks like a win-win from every aspect. We talked about the Postal Service last week, and we got some fan emails, if you will. People said they're glad to hear postal news, even though the news is not good. One of the things in their fiscal statement the other day, when the Postal Service said they had lost X number of dollars in the last quarter, they again mentioned, they said they had restructured their health program. I know they want to restructure it, but I didn't know they had restructured it.
I don't think so. I mean, they certainly want to restructure it. They say it would save them a lot of money. Particularly, they want to unload that obligation for paying into this future retiree health benefit fund. But to go forward, I mean, they need basically the backing of the administration, which they don't have at this point, and also I would suspect approval from Congress, or at least, you know, a lack of opposition from Congress, and I don't think they have that either. So I think they're still firmly entrenched in the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I think they reached an impasse, or they're going to arbitration or whatever you call it, with the American Postal Workers Union. That's the indoor people, the clerk craft.
Actually, no, they reached a contract with the APWU last year. Now, they are currently in an impasse with heading that way with all three other unions, the National Rural Letter Carriers Association, the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, and the National Association of Letter Carriers. They're in arbitration with the rural letter carriers, and then I think they've basically had an officially declared impasse with the other two unions. So right now they essentially have three out of four of their labor contracts, which are up in the air.
Someone told me that in the contract with the letter carriers and the others that they had brought up the issue of a separate health plan. Do you know that?
I know that they, because I heard the president of the NALC, the National Association of Letter Carriers, you know, represents the city carriers, talk a couple months ago. And he did say they were discussing something, but it wasn't, you know, both sides are pretty hush-hush about the actual details of contract talks, so he wouldn't go into it. But the NALC claimed that there was something they were putting forward, some proposal that might save money. I think one option that both sides are looking at would be essentially to push more of their retirees onto Medicare, you know, as the first resort health plan as opposed to the federal plan.
I thought that was the case already.
I don't think so. I know because I heard the Postmaster General speak last August, and he was saying that by making Medicare the cover, you know, essentially the insurer first resort, it would save the Postal Service a lot of money.
Okay, well, I say this not to be funny, but I've talked to a number of postal workers about it, and I've talked to several postal union leaders, and the interesting thing is they say they don't know what the Postal Service proposal is going to be as far as setting up a separate health plan, but they don't like it.
Well, I think when the Postal Service says, you know, that they want to set up a new plan because it's going to save them money, you have to presume that the benefits are not going to be as generous, so that you're going to pay more. And certainly, I think most people on Medicare, as I understand it, you know, they often it's very common to purchase a separate separate policy out of your pocket to cover expenses that basic Medicare coverage won't. So I have to say, I understand why the Postal Service wants to do this. I can also understand why postal workers are suspicious and concerned.
Okay, we'll stay tuned. Listen, gang, thanks for being with us, and we'll talk to you next week. Sean Riley and Steve Watkins from the Federal Times. We'll be right back here talking with Julie Tagan from the National Active and Retired Federal Employees.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that Geico isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how Geico actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, Geico saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
Register now for AFSCIA's 11th Annual Homeland Security Event, February 28th through March 1st at the Reagan Center. Focusing on vigilance during challenging times, doing more without more, this is the venue where you will hear firsthand about the critical IT issues facing our country in the fight against terrorism. This event is proudly sponsored by AT&T, Booz Allen Hamilton, CenturyLink, General Dynamics, InfoZen, NJVC, Kinetic North America, SAIC, and Verizon, and features speakers from all levels of government, military, and industry. Panelists from across the Homeland Security enterprise will dialogue on border security, cyberspace, immigration, disaster response, doing business with DHS, and other critical issues. Contractors and agencies will showcase the latest security products and solutions in the exposition. Register to attend or exhibit at afcea.org, keyword homeland. That's afcea.org.
To win and deliver government contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Meet Tech Systems. While often behind the scenes, Tech Systems has worked with government agencies and systems integrators for over 25 years. In fact, every year, they deploy over 70,000 IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems is active across a broad spectrum of government programs and has developed deep relationships who understand what works well and who does it best. Thinking about cybersecurity? Working on a cloud computing initiative. Tech Systems addresses critical program gaps related to people, projects, and work functions. Their delivery models scale from staff augmentation to IT project and outsourcing services to support transition, ramp-up, surge, and ongoing program support needs. Learn more at TechSystems.com. TEKSystems.com.
Eagles fans, tickets to American University basketball's final two regular season home games in Bender Arena are on sale now. Get them online 24/7 at AUEagles.com or call the athletic ticket office at 202-885-TIXX. That's 202-885-TIX. Catch AU's next home game Thursday, February 23rd against Bucknell at 7 p.m. The first 1,000 fans will receive a Coach Jeff Jones bobblehead doll, courtesy of Geico.
On Valentine's Day, you might be thinking about how you'll give that special kiss to a loved one. But did you know scientists are actually studying the process? Understanding a kiss, from the biochemistry to the mechanics, may help advance technologies in areas like virtual reality, medicine, and robotics, says Cheryl Kirschenbaum of the University of Texas. She wrote a book called The Science of Kissing.
Especially in robotics, engineers are interested in mirroring some of those effects.
For example, one study showed that no matter what hand we prefer when kissing,
2/3 of us tilt our heads to the right.
And she says now Japanese researchers have created a device that transmits kisses over the internet.
Whatever they were doing with their mouths were supposed to be simulated at the other end.
So one day you might not even need to be with your Valentine to exchange a kiss. To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn, Mike Causey. We just had a nice chat with Sean Riley and Steve Watkins from the Federal Times, and now looking forward to visiting with Julie Tagan. She's here in the studio with me, and she's the legislative director of the National Active and Retired Federal Employees. Julie, welcome. Thanks for making the trek from Alexandria.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on today, Mike.
Hey, this is cool. We can do some breaking news here. You just, while you were turning off your cell phone, you got an email, right?
I did. It looks like the House will not take up the highway bill this week. And the reason for that is that the piece that applied to federal employees, having federal employees give more towards their retirement, it was a part of the offset for the highway bill and was going to be voted on as H.R. 3813. But at the same time, while they were doing that, the conference committee on the payroll tax holiday decided to use that piece as an offset for the extenders on that. So you can't use it in both places. And it looks like I just got breaking news that they're going to have to figure out some more offsets for the highway bill and take that up after President's Day recess.
And under that proposal, regardless of where it comes from, what would happen to federal workers?
Under the conference committee on the payroll tax holiday, it looks like employees would be asked to contribute 1.2% more into their retirement, both CSRS and FERS employees, and it would be 0.4%. Probably starting right away, and then going 2013, 2014. So it would be 1.2% total.
And in the highway bill, was it the same amount?
No, the highway bill actually did a couple of things. One, it was 1.5% increase, but it also did away with the FERS supplement, which made it very difficult for people to retire, FERS employees to retire before age 62, and was really problematic.
So would the FERS supplement idea, that would be retained in the highway bill?
That's unclear how they're going to deal with any of this now. So I think we'll know more next week.
You know, what this reminds me of, there used to be one state, and I don't want to besmirch it, but I believe it was Utah. And if you were sentenced to death, you had the choice of shooting or hanging. That's kind of what this looks like here.
Exactly. It's one bad proposal after another.
Okay. Now, you guys, NARF, you emphasize the fact that it's National Active and Retired. It used to be thought of as a retirees-only organization, but I know you've been getting a lot of people who have not retired as members. And I guess the issue is these people are looking ahead, and one of the things NARF does and does best is protect the retirement system.
Absolutely. We're focused on cuts everywhere, and we think active employees should view NARF. We're out there defending pay and benefits for all employees and retirees. So I encourage all active employees to join NARF. It's a great organization. We're out there on the Hill every day, pounding the pavements, trying to protect pay and benefits and things that you've earned.
Moment of truth is I am a NARF member, have been for 10 or 12 years. And I wondered why I always get two alerts, but one is on the news side and one is as a member. But I got an alert, was it today or yesterday, that NARF is having a big call-in?
Yes. Thanks for bringing that up. Yeah. Today is our national call-in day. We timed it perfectly.
Yeah.
And we're asking every federal employee and retiree to call the Hill today. And if I can shamelessly send out the 800 number, this is NARF has an 800 number for the Capitol switchboard, and it's 866-220-0044. And please call your member of Congress and tell them to not use these things to offset these bills. I mean, NARF believes in a shared sacrifice, and if everyone's going to have to be a part of reducing the deficit or making this country better, I think federal employees would agree to be a part of that. But the problem is they're not asking anyone else to give anything. It's just federal employees and retirees down the road. So I think it's important to get your point across that it's not fair to single out federal employees in this manner.
Well, it's interesting. John Gage, the president of the American Federation of Government Employees, big supporter of President Obama's election, is now very disappointed with things. And he said the administration is using federal workers like an ATM machine. Colleen Kelly, who's president of the National Treasury Employees Union, also endorsed the President Obama's election. And they said they are extremely disappointed by the pay raise. And the only silver lining is that it's not a continuation of the pay freeze. And I know NARF is, I guess you're nonpartisan or bipartisan?
Yes, we are. We're nonpartisan.
Okay, do not. But you have a political action committee, correct?
We do have a political action committee. We do score votes in Congress. In fact, we were about to score the vote on the highway bill and asked members of Congress to oppose that highway bill because of the offset in it. So we do score, and we do have a political action committee, and we do contribute to members of Congress.
Okay, and it is on a bipartisan basis?
It is on a bipartisan basis.
Okay. There's so many things coming at federal workers, it's hard to keep track of them. What all is out there? We talked about the increasing the retirement contribution, and there's several proposals, everything from 1.2% to 1.5%, which is a sizable difference when you compound it over a lifetime.
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up. Right now, if you make about $50,000 a year, that's basically a $600 tax on that you're paying. That's coming out of your pocket every year, $600 more with no additional or enhanced retirement benefits. So that's a lot of money for someone who's middle class and making about $50,000 a year.
Well, Steve Watkins and Sean Riley from Federal Times were on earlier, and they were talking about this proposal of Congressman Ross. And it would make some significant cuts as well, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that bill, and that was going to be voted on as a part of the highway bill, and that also would do away with the FERS retirement system for new employees and for employees who are not vested, so have less than 5 years of service. And that they would be asking those employees to contribute 10.2% to their retirement and also use the highest 5 years of service in their calculation versus the highest 3 years of service. And they would change the multiplier from 1% to 0.7. Now, that's a drastic reduction. That's almost 40% reduction in the annuities that federal employees would receive under this new system. And it's a savings of about $45 billion over 10 years. But it's something we're very much opposed to doing away with, the FERS retirement system. We believe that the FERS system is a fair system and treats employees fairly and gives them some retirement security.
So if you're a new hire or if you have less than 5 years service in government under FERS, your contribution would go from, I may be wrong here, 0.8% to 10.2%?
Well, you contribute to Social Security, so it would really be 3.2% more towards – it wouldn't be called FERS. It would be called something else. So you'd still contribute to Social Security and then 3.2% more.
I guess that's why I'm so confused, and I know other people are, is one of the plans – the White House plan would raise it by 1.2%. There's another plan that would raise it by 1.5%, and then this – this takes it up to 3.2%
for new employees. Yeah. For new employees and employees who have less than 5 years of service.
Okay. What are you hearing about furloughs?
I think that when we are starting to look at sequestration, that you're going to see a lot of activity. It could be furloughs. It could be reductions in force. You know, it really is going to depend on if sequestration takes place. There's thoughts out there that they could really get to deficit reduction, but it's very clear that Congress can't agree on anything. So it would have to take place after the election in a lame duck session.
The House Budget Committee, and I know you've seen it, put out a Q&A, if you will, on sequestration. And our boss here, Lisa Wolf, the program director, asked us all to look at it because very few people, myself included, understand what sequestration is. And one of the things it mentioned was that nearly everything is on the table, exceptions being things like Pell Grants, veterans programs, and it said that while federal pay and benefits couldn't be cut, agencies could furlough, and it actually mentions that in the document. So we need to take a short break. We'll come right back here.
EMC solutions for data center consolidation, virtualization, cloud, and security help federal agencies achieve their mission with lower risk and cost. Immix Group, a federally focused IT distributor, works with solution providers to ensure EMC products are available through preferred vehicles to simplify the acquisition of storage solutions. To learn how EMC solutions can help your agency or to partner with Immix Group, visit emcgov.com. That's emcgov.com. Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
The Federal IT Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to fundamentally change how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented,
"Virtualization abstracts the operating system and the data from the device. It provides a certain amount of agility and flexibility from a technological standpoint. Using virtualization and virtual desktop infrastructure to liberate the data from the endpoint device and bring it into the private cloud, that's key. The data in particular, it provides so much more flexibility for multiple devices to be mobile and geographically disparate and still have access to that data."
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning, NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
Hey man, what's up? Angie went to Walmart and got this cool Pioneer HD radio receiver, and now she's like, eh, I don't know.
Simple stuff. Check out the buyer's guide at HDradio.com.
Cool buyer's guide. Oh, here's the Pioneer DEH-44, under $120 at Walmart. Angie, hip and smart.
See, dude, HDradio.com has the answers you need, and Walmart has the Pioneer with built-in HD radio technology you want. Now all you need to do is learn how to talk to girls.
Learn about HD radio technology at HDradio.com. More radio, more value.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Government financial managers are committed to produce timely, reliable, and useful financial information. Stay on top of issues that affect you at AGA's 10th Annual National Leadership Conference, February 16th and 18th at the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center. AGA's NLC features the latest tools and innovations to help agencies do their jobs more easily and more effectively. Don't miss it. Register today at agacgfm.org/NLC. Want the latest Department of Defense news? Listen every Wednesday for DoD Wednesday on Federal News Radio. Wednesday afternoons at 2, Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. Then stick around Wednesday afternoons at 3 when in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a deep dive into the issues and challenges of the defense community. All this plus our daily DoD updates at 40 past the hour, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey. I'm talking with Julie Tagan from the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association, and this interesting combination of things that are coming at federal workers, proposals to make feds pay more for their retirement, and they range from 1.2% proposed by the president to 1.5% proposed by another group, and yet another one, a bill by Congressman Ross, who has some clout and some teeth in the House, would raise it 3.2%. So lots of things happening. Julie, we were going to talk about, we talked about furloughs and that sort of thing. What is there anything good happening for feds?
No, I can't say there's a whole lot of good going on. There's just a fight out there. Yesterday I was on a call and someone said, they described it as, well, it's like whack-a-mole. You know, one time it comes up and somebody whacks it and it goes back down and it pops up somewhere else. And I thought that was a really good description of what's going on here. And it's really a fight, and it's federal employees, it's postal issues, it's happening all throughout. And really, federal employees are an easy scapegoat for Congress and have just become, you know, the piggy bank for anything that's going on out there to use as an offset. What worries me tremendously is that if they start using all of these things as offsets, like the federal employee pay freeze and having employees put more towards their retirement, what's next when real deficit reduction has to take place, and we know that has to take place? Then they're going to go after things like federal employee health benefit program and have employees pay a lot more towards their premiums and things like that. They could start looking at federal retirees' COLAs and things like that. And it's very, very troubling. The environment is not friendly at all, from the president down to, you know, the Tea Party Republicans in Congress.
Okay. Jolie Lee is making signs to me, and either my ear is too big or we have somebody on the phone. Got a call? Yes, you with us?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Yes,
what can we do for you?
Well, hello, Julie and Mike. I retired in December 2010, December 31st, 14 months ago. I started receiving my interim annuity in February. I'm CSRS with no offset. I have no credible military service. Never been married. I have 30-plus years with a single agency. And here I am. Here I am in February, more than a year later. I'm still receiving an interim annuity. I've contacted my congressman 3 times, and they've in turn contacted OPM. I've contacted my HRO, and they contacted OPM DC.
But nothing. Can I ask you, not the dollar amount, but what percentage of your real annuity are you getting now?
About 70%.
So you're getting about 70%. That's not good. And Julie's shaking her head here. That's 14 months. And I know the Federal Times people have been on this, and there is a backlog. OPM Director John Berry has made it a priority. But what's going on here?
It's just terrible that I'm sorry that you have to go through that situation, because you're supposed to be really – it's supposed to be figured out within 90 days. Just 2 weeks ago, NARF President Joe Bowden Goldwyn testified before the Senate on this very issue. OPM Director John Barry testified before Senator Akaka's subcommittee. And OPM has indicated that there's the backlog is over 62,000 retirees. That's incredible. And what makes matters worse is that if there are furloughs, and not furloughs, reductions in force, and they're talking about putting reducing the postal workers by over 100,000, and a lot that will result in a lot more retirements, OPM could really be seeing maybe a two-year backlog. And I know Director Barry and OPM are really trying to put a program in place to move forward on this, and NARF supports giving them whatever they need to be able to do that, because people like you should not have to wait this long, and you really shouldn't be – you should be getting 90% of your original salary. And your story is a little unique because you – I think you indicated you worked at one agency the whole time, and you don't have – it's not very complicated.
And
your retirement
no spousal consideration.
Yeah, it's not complicated at all. So this should be really a no-brainer. I'd contact your senator. You know, please call NARF, and you know, we probably don't have as much pull as your senator, but we do work with OPM on a lot of issues, and just keep plugging away.
Yeah, they're www.narfe.org is your email address.
Well,
okay.
I did. OPM Boyerstown has handles customer service for these retirements, and they created in December a program called the Escalation Management Team, where basically supervisors going up from first level all the way up to fifth level would contact OPM in D.C. about particular cases and try to get them expedited. Well, I've topped out at level five. I've gotten... You know, basically that program's gone nowhere. And earlier in your show, you were talking about the possibility of hiring recent retirees. Well, OPM has told me that they had a lot of retirees in the past year or two. And this throwing untrained bodies at the problem, I don't think it's going to work, although hiring recent retirees that have the experience already trained up for it.
OPM has indicated that they're going to hire a number of employees, and you're right, it takes time to train them, but they have to do something, and at least they'll do that. And they are talking about prioritizing recent retirees to come back to OPM, people who have the experience and can put together these retirement packages. Some of the problem lies in that with the agencies, that they're not sending complete packages over to OPM, and it requires more work. But your case is really one of those terrible cases where it should be very easy to resolve this.
Well, you know, when this happened years ago, and it happens from time to time, one of the problems they found was that some agencies were saving all of the packages. You know, you might retire on the 1st, and I retire on the 31st, and Joe Smith retires on the 15th. They wait till the end of the month and send them all over in bulk. Well, that was easy for them, but it delayed some people by at least 30 days. And the Federal Times guys, just before you came here, said that retirements were up 24%. In the last quarter, and so the tsunami that long predicted is hitting, and the Postal Service, of course, is downsizing, getting rid of people. Half of the agencies now are offering buyouts. So no matter what OPM does, this would seem maybe it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Absolutely, and with Congress really picking the pockets of federal workers, it is only morale is at an all-time low. It is only going to get worse. If you could retire, you know, retirement is always a financial decision, but if you have the financial well-to-do that you could retire, I think you're going to. Why go through the beating and the uncertainty of what's going to happen to your retirement? You know, most people are going to just get out now, and we're going to see a brain drain.
We have had emails here at Federal News Radio from people who said their interim payment was 40%. So if you can imagine retiring and in effect taking a 60% pay cut for 6 months, a year. In this man's case, he's taken a 30% pay cut, and it's been going on for 14 months.
And that's not how you should treat people who serve their country. And they served it proudly, and they were proud of their work, and now they have to wait like this. It's just not fair.
Would I be correct if I guessed that there's a special operation for members of Congress who retire, that they don't wait 14 months?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, okay. All right, got to take my break. We're over with. Thank you, Julie Tagan, for coming in, for National Active and Retired Federal Employees. Check out NARF's website, and remember, we're archived. You can listen to us anytime. We'll see you next Wednesday.
Thank you,
have
Mike.
A good week.